And statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Inspirational women are increasingly popular in the news and media, but many go unheard and their stories are never told. Women to Watch with Susan Rocco captures the stories of many women who truly make a difference. Women to Watch is the vehicle for developing new leaders, encouraging younger generations, and in building self-esteem for future entrepreneurs.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch here on WWDB Talk 860 and womentowatch.net. My name is Sue Rocco, and before we get started, I want to give you our call-in number in case you're listening to the show and you'd like to join in the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that by dialing 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. And as always, please visit our website to find out who's on our lineup and coming up on the show. And you can find us at womentowatch.net. That's women, the number two, watch.net. So I want to get started right off the bat. I'm so excited this afternoon to bring a guest onto the show who I met about a year ago. And I'm very honored to have her join us from London. She is calling us from her hometown, and her name is Elizabeth Filippulli. Elizabeth is the founder and CEO of Global Thinkers, as well as the Global Thinkers Forum, which is an organization that is international, and it works as an agent for positive change. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Hello, Susan. Thank you for having me.
I'm very happy to have you and very excited. I've been looking forward to this day and this show to talk about, you know, the really amazing work that you're doing, and happy to share it with our listeners. Tell me what it's. Are you calling from London? I assumed you were.
Actually, this week I'm in Athens.
Oh, you are? Okay. Okay.
I'm very much based out of a suitcase.
You are. You are. It can be exhausting, right? The traveling.
Oh, well, it's true. On the other hand, it is so exciting to meet new people or to see friends who live in different parts of the world. So that kind of compensates for any fatigue or any exhaustion from too many airports and airplanes.
Right, exactly. Well, listen, you're in Athens, and actually that is where you grew up, right?
Indeed, yes. Yeah. I was born and raised in Athens.
So yeah, I would love to hear a little bit about the young Elizabeth growing up in Greece. And, of course, I want to hear a little bit about your relationship with your dad, because you speak quite often about him being a very big part of why you do the work you do today. And he was quite an inspiration. So talk just for a few minutes about your younger years and what your own aspirations were growing up and some of the challenges that you faced.
Of course. Well, I was born in a family of journalists and publishers. So I would say that journalism and storytelling is in my DNA in a way. And my dad was an explorer. So a mind that was always very inquisitive. I guess that was the main reason why he became a journalist. But he was also a very prolific personality. So beyond the journalist, he was also an artist, a poet, a very well-known screenwriter, and also someone who was very known for his sense of humor. And his personality had intrigued me also because in his early years, in his late teens, early 20s, he decided to explore the world. So for about 5 or 6 years, he became a sailor on a cargo ship. And I remember the stories from mid-50s, early 60s, when he was traveling the world, working on a cargo ship and sailing from India to the Persian Gulf, from the Persian Gulf to Djibouti, from there to the Mediterranean, and from there to France and Brittany. and to New York. So all the different stories of the people that he was coming across, the cultures, the values that he was discovering in people coming from different backgrounds, different religions and histories. And at the same time, his eagerness, which was becoming stronger and stronger, the more people and the more different countries he would meet, to dig deeper into the world and its values and how these differences and diversity could bring us together. And so sharing these stories with me, I was very intrigued from a very young age to do the same and travel the world a lot and see how I could come closer to people and get to live in their communities, in their societies, but not just as a traveler. Perhaps if I could, as one of them, as one of different, from a different group than the one I had grown up in. So that was the beginning. Then my father talked to me a lot about journalism and the importance of journalism being more of a mission and less of a profession, because he felt that we need, as journalists, to serve the world and to make it a better place, to promote justice, to promote fairness, to allow people to voice their concerns, their issues, their problems, and give voice to the unheard. And, of course, this is how you brand your program. I mean, bringing the microphone to those stories and those women who not always make it to the headlines or to the spotlight. And
yes,
this is very, very important. So journalism was a very natural course, if you like. And I always felt that I needed to do eventually in a way that could combine both worlds. So Elizabeth as the storyteller, as the messenger, and Elizabeth as the explorer. So if it could give me the opportunities to travel the world and bring different stories to the spotlight, that would be my dream, my ideal profession. And that's how my father affected everything, of course, in a very short, in a nutshell, really, because in so many ways he has inspired me and in so many ways he has been guiding me.
Mm.
Even though he's not with us anymore, I mean, his spirit and his wisdom still guides what I do.
Yeah. You know what? I also read that you're quite a family of storytellers, I'll say, because your grandparents as well were in the media. And didn't they launch one of the first daily papers in Greece?
Indeed, yes.
Yeah.
Acropolis, one of the oldest papers in Greece, and then Poyo Matini, and my uncle also, he launched Ethnos. And I think from both parts, both my mom's and my dad's part, they are in the media business and in journalism, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, indeed. That's why I said in the beginning that it is very much in my DNA.
Yes. Well, you know what I love so much about what you said, Elizabeth? Your curiosity for traveling to so many different places and different cultures and getting to know people that are very different from you is such a wonderful thing, and it's a message that I know you're trying to instill in the people that you work with, because I think, especially in today's climate, that typically people have a fear of those that are different. And isn't that, you know, often something that, you know, it is a struggle and continues to keep people from seeing what a wonderful, you know, the wonderful aspect of having so much diversity and learning about people in different cultures and how they lead as well and their values, as you said.
Well, yes, I think that being afraid or being wary of difference is something that is part of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's a recent phenomenon, really. I think that we have the tendency to be part of to like being part of a unified group, because we feel more comfortable when we are with people who think alike, who look alike, who behave alike. So it's something that difference is something that pushes us outside of our comfort zones.
Yes.
And you can notice that even, you know, from with children at a very young age, they spot something different and they point the finger at it, and they do it instinctively, they do it naturally. So it's something that we need to teach our children, how to embrace diversity and difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we need to understand, that it's far, far better and far more soul-satisfying if we manage to view those differences as bridges and as opportunities for a dialogue with someone who's different, instead of a barrier, instead of an obstruction.
Yes, you know,
and
yes.
So, yeah, please.
No, I was just going to, I think children are the greatest teachers of that often, because they lack the fear. They, you know, so when they're very young and they haven't had life experience yet, they're often great examples of reaching out to children, I think, that are different without that judgment or preconceived notions.
Well, yes and no, because I think that racism, for example, is something that comes as part of our nature, even not only with human beings, but also in the animal kingdom. When someone is weaker, when a little bird is weaker, or it's ill, it cannot fly as high, or it cannot fly at all, then they leave it behind. Or as human beings, from a very young age, when we spot something which is weaker, sometimes children will tend to bully against it instead of embracing it, instead of supporting it and helping it. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. I do. I know exactly what you're saying. I think that sometimes you see that in older children, but the very young, you know, the toddlers, I think, are typically
more affectionate.
They are. Mm-hmm. They just haven't had the life experience that starts to shape how they, you know, think about other people, I'll say. It's an interesting topic, you know. But I think your innate curiosity and wanting to really show what diversity can do as far as, you know, positive change and global is such an inspiration, and it's something I think the more that those conversations are had and the more we show what can come of bringing people from so many different cultures together, the better, you know, and that's really at the heart of the work that you're doing.
Yes, and I think it is all about values. The whole conversation that we create as Global Thinkers Forum, but
yes,
also that I personally feel that we need to create as people, especially in a world that is so complex and in a world where differences and diversities are so highlighted,
mm-hmm,
so up in the agenda. We need to differentiate between beliefs and values, because beliefs are more political. They are contextual.
Mm-hmm.
They relate to things which are more subjective, whereas values are principles that all of us share.
Yes.
No matter where we come from, no matter what God we believe in, no matter what background we bring to the table when it comes to values like family, peace, honesty, transparency, collaboration, teamwork, vision. All of us share these values, Susan. I don't know if you agree with me, but
yes,
I think
absolutely.
That
yes,
these are universal ideas.
They are. They are. And, you know, I'm going to jump ahead to a question I had because it speaks to what you're talking about. you know, you describe your organization as truly non-political and nonpartisan. And I, you know, I often wonder what it's like when you're sitting in a room full of these thought leaders, you know, who all are very interested in the same thing, truly bringing about positive change globally. Can you describe for me what the atmosphere is like and how you bring together, you know, these people with, first of all, I want to know how do you find the particular thought leaders that you bring into the organization? And it might be from a couple of different avenues, but, you know, describe for me what it's like when you're all sitting in a room together and how you're able to have very productive conversation without the, I'll say, you know, the opinions and the beliefs getting in the way of, you know, the outcome. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yes. Because the common thread among all these people who are honoring us with their presence on our board and their work, support, and endorsement, the common thread is that they are all true global thinkers. And what I mean by that is that A, are people of vision. B, people that are able to connect the dots so they can see the wider perspective of things. They operate with foresight, and they are very committed towards positive change and ethos. And they understand that these elements, these very important elements, are above political parties, political ideologies. They have nothing to do with votes, and all they have to do with is creating societies which will be societies that are more fair towards citizens and that will create opportunities for the disadvantaged, opportunities for youth, that is the future, and also opportunities for women who need to be part of our economies and the global economy, which, as a globalized economy, as we know, has now come under question mm-hmm. and under scrutiny for its effectiveness and its delivery
yes.
of the promises that it has been giving, if you like, mm-hmm. to our world over the last 20 years. So these people are connected by the same values and connected by the same desire and vision to be not talkers, but actually doers and create a better world also through our organization. But each and every one of them, from their own post, from their own leadership position, whatever they do, they create positive change.
Elizabeth, do you
now,
see...
Now, as to how we find them?
Oh, yeah? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
About your second question as to how we find them.
Yes.
I would say it's a mutual relationship in a way. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we find them. We follow people who are thought leaders, either because they're in the news or because we follow them on social media or because they have been recommended or introduced to us as truly inspiring stories, truly successful people who have not made the headlines yet. Mm. And so we feel the obligation to promote them and to make their stories known around the world. And some other times they find us. They hear about Global Thinkers Forum, the mission, the reach, the work, and they say, we would like to join you. We would like to be part.
Yes. Do you, Elizabeth, see a commonality among these particular people that you describe, global thinkers, people who are actionable? Is there a commonality in their background, where they come from? Do you see anything that's similar?
Do you mean professionally?
No, I more just, is there something that you can point to that you think there's... there's probably not, but something about their back, where they have come from, perhaps challenges that they have overcome in their own lives, that leads them to become these type of global thinkers, as you describe them?
Well, you know, Susan, show me a person from whatever background, a wealthy background or a poor background, that hasn't had to deal with challenges in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the opportunity with Global Thinkers Forum to meet and to work together with truly high-profile leaders, with heads of state. Her Majesty Queen Rania of Jordan was our patron on our launch here in 2012. And I also have the opportunity to work with people who perhaps only a small group has heard about them or their work. But there is an eagerness and there is a desire that connects Queen Rania with the lady from, I don't know, from Turkey, who is struggling to create positive change in her village and empower women or empower youth and get something positive go on for her immediate environment, if you see what I mean,
yes.
Or help refugees in need, or help a child that is an orphan.
Yeah.
And that's her own way to create positive change. So this is something that connects a top leader or a recognized leader and someone who's a smaller leader, but in reality, a very big leader in their own society or community.
Yeah. You know, I often say that no matter your background or work or what you're doing, that everyone is equally important. And I love for women in particular to know that and believe that what they have to offer or what they have to say or what they believe is equally as important as perhaps, you know, those that really have an opportunity to be on the global stage and get a lot of exposure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that every dream is possible. As long as we believe in ourselves, as long as we know that we can make things happen, as long as we are fearless, and that is not something easy to be or
yeah.
to do.
Yeah.
But it is a process and it is a journey.
Yeah.
No one was born fearless.
Yeah. Well, were you fearless when you were young? Is that something
Goodness,
you developed
no.
over time?
It's something I developed over time. And
yeah.
and I had the blessing of having, of course, two parents who were always very encouraging, who were always telling me that I should believe in myself, that I should take risks in my life, that I should think big, dream big. But I also had the blessing of having very visionary mentors in my life. And mentoring is another, I think, very important thing or blessing that someone can have in their life. So my mentors also helped me in overcoming my fears and my insecurities. One of the people that has played a major role in my life and also Global Thinkers Forum is my university professor, Mark Ventresca. He's a professor of entrepreneurship and system building at SBS School, Said Business School in the University of Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, he was my supervisor when I was working on my dissertation, which was based on Global Thinkers Forum. And I remember at the time, that was in 2010, that I was sharing with Mark my insecurities and my concerns as to not only the vision of the organization, but also how to realize and materialize something so ambitious and so big.
Mm.
And Mark was not just encouraging, but he gave a massive boost to my confidence. And he said that, Elizabeth, you have the knowledge, you have the background, but also there is a network in place a network that trusts you, which is extremely important to build relationships of trust. And if people trust you, then by giving back this trust, you can create something that will be of influence and positive change. And these words I've always kept in my mind. I keep them in my heart.
Yeah.
And they were the key words that made me think, okay, I will go for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so often that someone in our lives will say something, and it can be very small. It can be one sentence. And for some reason, at that moment in time, it has a strong impact. For the listeners who might not know all of your background, you gave a TED Talk in March of 2013. And I noticed and I loved the fact that you based it on all of these people who have come into your life, through your journey, and starting with your dad, and how each one of them left with you a lesson. Or something that kind of helped you, make a choice to do something in your life. And you describe yourself as a mad global thinker, which I think is a great description. I wanted to know, in all of the people that have come in and out of your life and mentors and you've had an opportunity to interview yourself a lot of very interesting, successful people. Is there one person in particular, aside from perhaps Mark, that left you with a lesson that you refer to often, perhaps in challenging times?
Yes. More than one. The first person that comes to mind is Ted Turner.
Okay.
During my career in journalism, I had the opportunity to become a CNN fellow and work with CNN for 6 years. And I had the privilege to meet Ted and to interview him a couple of times. And I was so impressed by his personality, and B, by his madness.
Yes.
I mean, he is an amazing visionary.
Yes.
So beyond the businessman, he's an amazing businessman, he's an amazing media mogul, but beyond that, I think he's a fantastic individual, perhaps the epitome of accountability, because he has been among the first philanthropists who donated such a big amount to an organization like the UN, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and created, when was it? I think 1997, the UN Foundation. And Ted, I don't know if you are familiar with his story.
Yes.
So he lost his father in his late teens, if I'm not mistaken. And his father, when he died, he had lost a very big part, if not the best part, of their fortune. And so Ted had to look after his sisters, and he had to start from scratch in a way, or from a very, very small amount left in their fortune. And he managed to, rise from the ashes. And then at some point in the beginning of the 80s, he decided, of course, he was already in the media for a few years, but he decided to take a step that everyone was labeling as a completely mad, insane business
right. Yes.
move.
Yes.
So launched the 24/7 news network.
Yes.
And at the time, everyone had told him that you're going to lose your fortune. Don't do it. But he did. He didn't listen to them because it was his foresight, but also his business acumen and a good amount of madness.
Right. Or fearlessness.
Pushed him to go ahead.
Yes.
Fearlessness.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's an interesting question because, so we live in this 24-hour news cycle, and we talk about this on the show quite a bit, that we now have knowledge every day, all day long, of the issues that are going on around the entire world. And what I think about my own self growing up, we pretty much knew what was going on in the community, and that was enough. I'd love to know, Elizabeth, how you handle this overwhelming sense of knowledge of all of the global issues of the day, and how do you not become overwhelmed? How do you sort out where you can best focus your efforts and where you can best have an impact and make a difference when there are so many things that need attention?
Very good question, Susan. it takes sometimes it does take a lot of effort because there is so much information and so many things interesting, sometimes less interesting, urgent or less urgent to deal with on a daily basis for all of us, mm-hmm. because we live in the times of information overload.
That's right.
We get news and stories and breaking news and information or misinformation,
yes.
from every possible source.
That's right.
So, first of all, my focus is very clear when it comes to the mission that we serve, which focuses on the three pillars of accountable leadership, youth development, and women's empowerment. So all the projects that we deliver on a daily basis or on a yearly basis, they have a very specific mission. Number two, which is very important, I have an amazing team of people who understand the mission, and they help me with that on the day-to-day basis. And I have an absolutely fantastic advisory board with people who understand the wider reality, the global trends. They follow, or very often they lead those trends. And we are kept in the loop between each other with what is important, what is coming up. We try to catch what we call, what are called the weak signals, and foresee what will be in the news in the near future so that we can catch it early, we can work on it early, and we can engage our audience early.
Yeah, it's very important to have good people around you, isn't it, to kind of keep you focused when perhaps you want to, go off the rails. Some days it's harder to stay focused than other days. So I agree with you on that. Having good people around you that truly understand what the mission is very, very important. Elizabeth,
of course,
we're going to... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break.
I was about to say that my friends and family are extremely important in this respect.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about what exactly value-based leadership is, and the Valor method, that you developed, and give our audience a good sense of what it is that you're doing. We will be right back.
Sure.
There are 365 days to schedule a mammogram. Today is as good as any. Holy Redeemer Breast Care makes it easy. We offer the latest technology, like 3D mammography and automated breast ultrasound, that help find cancers in dense breast tissue. Plus, our same-day readings mean same-day peace of mind. Make today the day you schedule a mammogram. It's easy to request an appointment online at holyredeemer.com/mammogram.
Since 1858, Mount St. Joseph Academy has been educating girls to be leaders, founders, and independent thinkers. Students are taught to be collaborative, courageous, compassionate, confident, and spiritual. In this student-centered environment, the young women are transformed by recognizing their own potential and are encouraged to use it to make a difference in the world. To learn more about Mount St. Joseph Academy, go to www.msjacad.org or call 215-233-3177. That's msjacad.org or 215-233-3177. I'm pleased to announce the opening of the region's newest, most innovative gynecology practice in the Philadelphia area in mid-November, Montgomery Gynecology. Led by Dr. Hema John Ogata, in a welcoming boutique-style setting, she and her team are committed to providing the highest standard of cutting-edge care without losing the personal touch that is so very important in today's world. With a particular interest in minimally invasive surgical options, Dr. Hema completed advanced training in robotic surgery and is one of only two surgeons in Montgomery County who performs this highly specialized single-site robotic surgery. For more information on the opening of this exciting new practice in the convenient Plymouth Meeting location, go to www.montgomerygyn.com or call 215-444-3411. That's montgomerygyn.com or call 215-444-3411 to make an appointment today. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Women to Watch on WWDB Talk 860 and womentowatch.net. And I'm joined this afternoon by the wonderful Elizabeth Filippulli, who is the founder and CEO of Global Thinkers. Elizabeth, I want to talk a little bit about what value-based leadership means to you. What exactly do you think that is? And you know, that's one of the things that's at the core of your organization is encouraging this value-based leadership. What does it mean to you? How would you define that?
Well, I will go back, Susan, to what we were saying before, that this is a very complex and very interconnected, very interdependent world. And it's a world that highlights differences and diversities. And for that reason, we need to, as leaders, we need to think more from a global perspective and also try to build bridges and understanding between people. Also because our organizations and companies are becoming more and more multicultural. We witness and we experience this shift in populations, this massive wave of migration, and I think that nothing can be more telling as to how our societies are going to be different in 5, 10, 20 years from now, because mm-hmm. this is how societies evolve, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Population movement. So we need to understand that now more than ever, it is a demand to embrace values-based decision making, which means that as leaders, we need to be more accountable. We need to understand that we have to give back to society. We have to operate under a vision that will create more opportunities, not only for our companies if we are business leaders, but also for the stakeholders that are one way or another connected to our companies, our organizations, whatever it is that we run, we lead. So I would say that it is this multi-stakeholder approach that we need to embrace and also get us to be more accountable, not only towards society, but also towards humanity as a whole. So understand that the world is something that does not belong to us. It belongs to the future generations. And this is not just a theory. It is not a game. It's something very, very serious. And we need to realize that we're only temporary in this world. And so we better create a present that will develop eventually that will create eventually a sustainable future for the generations ahead of us.
Mm.
This is what values-based decision-making and values-based leadership means to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is a necessity if we want to talk about a world that will eventually become more peaceful, more secure, and more prone towards prosperity and development.
Yes, and I would say that we're seeing that now. Many companies are trying to implement that type of thinking, as opposed to I would say years gone by where it was just handling the business of the day, right? Just kind of focusing on particular products or services, or, you know, I think it's one of the things that perhaps has come out of being able to be connected globally is sharing the idea of the importance of, you know, making decisions based on values, as you said. So I think it's a positive thing that what I've seen from the interviews I've done from many women who are with corporations, companies, they have implemented initiatives that are doing exactly what you're saying we need to do.
Yes, more and more organizations and more companies embrace that because, A, they see the importance and the imminence of it.
Yes.
But there's also another aspect here. It's decentralization of power. Because of technology and innovation and because of social media, what we have witnessed over the last, I'd say, 10 years is this shift in decision-making. So now it's more the masses, it's more of the bottom-up decision-making instead of the traditional top-down hierarchy.
Yes.
And it's the people that send the messages, that send their demands, if you like, for justice and opportunities and fairness and also protection when they need it. Or for infrastructure or for facilities or for help, day-to-day help for the less privileged. So it's the people that send the message to those high up there, and it's the people that make the decisions today, or they guide, if you like, the decisions today. And that is a major shift as to how things operate. And
yes.
This is why leaders need to listen. They cannot afford to turn a deaf ear anymore.
You know, Elizabeth, when I think about how connected we are now, and this is kind of the irony of, you know, obviously one of the greatest issues of our time is this the terror networks, this radical Islamic terrorism and the global networks of terror. And I wanted to ask you your personal opinion on why you think we're seeing so many people that are feeling alone and isolated with, you know, a very false sense of identity when there is this ability to be so connected. So we have the, you know, again, the ability to be connected, but many, many people feeling isolated who then become vulnerable to this cause. What are your thoughts on that? Why we're seeing so much of that?
Well, because I think that as people, we like to label. We find cliches and stereotypes easy and convenient. And I think that media have major role to play, and a negative role, in fact, in stereotyping and reproducing stereotypes and replicating cliches around groups of people or countries. And for example, when I got this offer, this proposal from Al Jazeera English, when I was still a journalist in 2005 and working with CNN at the time, I got a proposal from Al Jazeera English to join them as a news presenter and producer. And that meant that my contract would take me to live in Qatar in the Gulf for 2 years. I have to say that it made headlines in my home country, in Greece, and everyone was asking the same question. I mean, how someone like you, Elizabeth, you have been born, you were born and raised in a Western country, in a liberal country. How are you going to deal with having to live in a society that is entirely different to yours, to the one that you grew up in, very conservative, very religious, and a religion that you can perhaps hardly understand? And I thought that I felt the need to try and understand a society that is so different to mine, to the one that I was feeling comfortable in, and also see myself, witness myself, whether the realities that are projected, presented by the media, are actually the realities on the ground. And I have to say, Susan, that I was very surprised and pleasantly surprised, for example, to come across and to meet and to be friends with the most amazing, fearless, powerful, talented, charismatic women from the Arab world, women who do not make it to the media, or only a very, very small number of them make it to the front pages because of their religion, because of their culture, because they cover their heads or even their faces. But that doesn't mean that they are not educated or successful as businesswomen, or they do not run family businesses. And not many stories like that make it to the media.
Yes. And they're probably visionaries as well.
Of course they are.
Without the opportunities that, what, you know, Elizabeth, you're so open-minded and, you know, seeking out these stories, and it's very wonderful to hear from all of the different countries that you've traveled to that you see this same human spirit among many cultures.
Of course I do, and I have very good friends, I would say friends for life, by so many different backgrounds and from so many different countries. And this is because what we are connected by is the human spirit. It's the soul connection. It's the fact that we feel the same about the world around us, about our families, about the importance of operating under a mindset of values, about creating societies which will be more peaceful and more prone towards creativity, innovation, positive change. So these are the elements that bring us together and get us to do things together, to launch initiative together. And of course, I mean, I don't think that there's any better example than the diversity of people under Global Thinkers Forum and the board, the two boards that we have. They just speak for themselves.
Yes, yes. And, you know, one of the things that you're doing is this mentor program, which I think is always so very important, to be having these conversations with young people. Because, as you said, you know, they're the future, and we want to bring them up with a different mindset and have them be as open-minded as well. Can you tell me something that you have learned from your mentee? Because I always think we learn more from our mentees than perhaps they learn from us.
Of course. So my mentee from Finland, the first time we were on the phone, she's 23. And so I said, I introduced myself, and I said, I would like to know more about you, so talk to me about yourself. And she was very hesitant, and I could hear her voice that she was quite shy. And she said, well, I'm not very good about talking, I mean, on talking about myself, speaking about myself. And I said, why is that? And she said, because the Scandinavian culture is a culture that does not allow a big ego. It's a culture that promotes and rewards, if you like, modesty.
Mm.
And not someone bragging about themselves. And I said, but I don't want you to brag about yourself. I want to hear about you, your aspirations, your dreams, your plans for the future, your fears and insecurities. And again, she said, well, if I start talking about myself, it will seem as if I want to stand out. And the culture in the part of the world that I come from does not want anyone to stand out. So for me, that was a new thing. I was not familiar with that. And so now the conversation, the way I see it, and I hope that she will like it and she will embrace it, because she is a very international mind. I mean, she has already traveled and worked in India, Japan, and Egypt, despite her very young age. I would like to explain to her that being proud of oneself and one's achievements, smaller or bigger, it's not something that is called bragging. It's about self-confidence. It's about feeling good with oneself and one's soul. So it's a two-way relationship. Mentoring, I mean, it's about the mentor learning from the mentee and vice versa.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting that she felt that way, because I think a lot of people feel that way when they're, and of course, you know, this is what I do every week. I try to have people share their story, and telling your story is not bragging. Telling your story is a gift to the listener. And I just think that is. And perhaps if we share that with young women in particular, I think they tend to be more modest about their own stories. It's more of a gift. But it's interesting. There's different cultures, I would say, that probably grow up with more of a sense that they should keep those stories private and not share them.
But you know, Susan, every society has its own culture and mindset and set of beliefs and set of values. For example, I come from a country, Greece, where entrepreneurship, or if you like, failure when someone decides to become an entrepreneur and his first venture doesn't work, he has to close down his or her business or whatever, is a stigma. So it's something that stigmatizes the person. It's something that will generate gossip in their immediate environment. And it's something that will be an embarrassing experience, a very traumatic experience, because this is the culture of the Greek society and other societies as well. Of course, not just the Greek society. On the other hand, in the U.S., the more you try, the more chances you have to fail, but the more chances you have to succeed. So it doesn't stop you. A failure or two or even a third failure, it doesn't stop you from making it. Mm. The fourth time.
Yes, that's right.
Making it big.
That's right. That's right. You know, one of the things I read about you, Elizabeth, is that you, or one of the messages I'll say that you want to give to other people is to always, you know, make a choice that might be scary to you, because that's often where some of the greatest successes lead. And I wondered if you could describe a time or an experience that you had where you were presented with a choice that truly was fearful for you, but you did it, you chose it. And had a good outcome. And perhaps it was the decision to start this organization, which has just, you know, done so much wonderful things.
Oh, yes. Yes, very true. because I had to choose between a very successful career in media, an established career, and moving ahead as an individual into a world which was entirely unknown to me at the time. So
yes.
Entrepreneurship and launching a business. So I took the leap of faith, and I thought, you know, if I do not take my risks, I'm never going to know if I will fail or if I win. I have to take my chances. I have to make my mistakes. I felt that this is the way to grow, and I felt that I need to nourish my courage. What I did, because I was absolutely determined to follow my dream, was equip myself with new knowledge. And that is a message that I would like to send, especially to young women who are listening to your program, Susan, that knowledge is power. And the more you can equip yourself with fresh ideas, with fresh thinking, with existing and established knowledge and critical thinking, the more powerful you become. So what I did before launching Global Thinkers Forum, I went back to school and I did 2 master's degrees, one in Oxford at Said Business School on Strategy and Innovation, and a master's degree at City University in London on Transnational Media and Globalization. So I didn't just go ahead with it. I equipped myself in order to feel more secure when it came to my intellectual power before launching Global Thinkers Forum. And that helped tremendously.
That builds confidence, doesn't it? To have the more knowledge you have, I think the more confident you become, and then of course you have the ability to really join in conversations that are important and contribute in the best way possible.
Absolutely. So it is inspiration, it is vision, it is courage, and it is very much knowledge. And fortunately, again, because thanks to technology, we are able to access knowledge very easily and for free, in fact.
That's right.
I mean, there are open courses out there. There are online courses which are free of charge. There are networks out there. So it is just within, the click of a button.
That's
it's available
right.
to us.
That's right. Elizabeth, we're out of time. I thank you so much. It was such an enjoyable conversation. And I hope that you will stay in touch, and I will be sharing all of the wonderful things that Global Thinkers and Global Thinkers Forum is doing.
Thank you so much, Susan. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. That's it, everyone, for this week of Women to Watch. Tune in every week at WWDB Talk 860 and womentowatch.net. Have a great week, everyone.